Blog Talk Radio.
Who is January Jones? She is not a young, beautiful, talented actress on Mad Men. She is not an older, gorgeous, exotic dancer from the Johnny Carson Show. She is an author, and she wrote Thou Shall Not Whine, the 11th Commandment, that reached number one at Amazon.com. She is a reality TV golf personality with World High Stakes Golf televised on HDNet. She is a humorist and winologist expert. She is your featured host today on January Jones Sharing Success Stories. So sit back, relax, and get ready to laugh and listen to Ms. Jones with her eclectic roster of guests as you learn life's lessons. These stories plus sharing equals success. Welcome, and remember, beware, because you are entering the no whining world of January Jones.
Now let me ask you a question. Have you ever had a favorite stuffed animal? One that you really loved, your favorite one. Now tell me, can you imagine what it would be like to have a stuffed animal named Ricky, a little monkey, and then to lose him? It would change your life forever. Have you ever wanted to know why so many children are victims of sexual abuse? There's an epidemic going on. Happens when a very, very young girl sends school. Have you ever heard about a wonderful book called Layla? Or have you ever heard about a wonderful nonprofit called Ricky's Revolution? Now, would you like to meet someone who has some of the answers that we're looking for today? Now, are you ready to learn how to be successful and how to join Ricky's Revolution? If you can answer yes or maybe to any of these questions, then you are in the right place, and I would like to welcome you to January. I'd love having her on the show. It's always very interesting and enjoyable, kindred spirit. She's provided us with wonderful information, inspiration, and some really, really great advice about abused children. I'm pleased to announce that this show is now live on Talk for Media and syndicated on iHeart Radio Talk with over 55 million subscribers. We are archived 24/7 for your listening pleasure at iHeart Radio. Our show has now had over 3.4 million listeners to date. So now it's time for you to sit back and relax as you enter the no wine zone. Pour yourself a glass of wine, get some cheese and crackers, and enjoy our show. Now let me tell you a little bit about our guest co-host today. She is an author, healer, teacher, and a spiritual leader, an incredible keynote speaker for nonviolence. She's taught quantum healing, somatic polarity, ancient wisdom teachings, and spirituality to students all over the world. Her lifelong passion is to bring modern relevance to this wisdom, weaving the web of nonviolence and empowering sacred movement in its highest vibration. Welcome back to our show today, the wonderful Jeannie Kerrigan. Hi, Jeannie. How are you today?
I'm well. Hi, January. How are you?
I'm good. I'm here. As you know, I've recovered from hip replacement.
Yeah, I was a little concerned. Yeah.
Yeah, so I've been kind of hobbling around, and I hate to say it, but I've been doing quite a bit of whining. But, you know, I think hip replacement, that's legitimate. You know, you can whine a little bit about that.
Yep. You get a free pass for a little while.
Oh, thank you. Let's share a little bit with some of our listeners who have never met you before, a little bit about what prompted you to write Layla and what prompted you to found Ricky's Revolution.
Well, Layla, I decided to write, I mean, the story of how it came about is kind of a long story. Somebody else wanted to write it first, and uh-huh. and we started that process, and then they actually interviewed me for almost a year and then gave me back the tapes of the interview and said they couldn't write it the way that I was speaking it. And I'm not so sure I was ready at that time anyway, but mm-hmm. I have been working as a therapist almost all of my adult life on helping people to heal. And the stories of my past were collectively becoming more important for other people, not so much for me, but for others and their own healing. So when they gave me back those tapes, I thought, you know what, I am going to write this book someday. And I did. I did.
How long did it take you to write this book?
The whole process, mm-hmm. you know, I might be changing every time I say this.
Okay.
Because that, I mean, it was almost 10 years from that, but
uh-huh. yeah.
maybe when I really seriously sat down to write it, it took me about 4 or 5 years.
Uh-huh. Now, writing this book, did this help you heal yourself?
I thought with my ego intact that I would go into that book and I would be just fine, and that's not the case.
Okay.
It turned out it was extremely cathartic for me. It was very healing for me. It was revealing for me. I finished the book and thought, I still think everybody should write their story, because when I made the commitment to sit down and write truth, absolute truth, I had to sort through a lot of my own, you know, wanting to hide or judgments of myself. Mm-hmm. Or judgments of things that I've done in the past, a shame and guilt still that was holding on, and pain. And so I was able, the book really did help me. It helped me to move through some of that pain. And in fact, and that was the purpose of the book, so that other people could move through the pain, and that has tripped into other people's lives as well, which was the goal. But yes, it helped me immensely to write that book.
Well, and it's a fearless book, and as we have talked about many times before, it's a rough read because you have to...
Fearless, yeah.
And some of the words will shock you. Some of the things in the book will shock you. The shocking part for me was that someone so young, such as you, that you were exposed to such traumatic things, and also this big wall of silence that surrounded you, that you never talked about it, or you didn't feel you could talk about it to anyone, and the isolation that must have come with that. Don't you agree?
I do agree. I think one of the things that concerns me the most about people who have been physically abused, sexually abused, people who have PTSD, anybody who has that trauma in their background, is the very first thing you do is not talk about it. And the psyche has to live with it anyway, and we end up in denial or disassociating. And for me, that is true. It was even true for my father, who was the abuser. Mm-hmm. The perpetrator, my first perpetrator, is the denial and the abuse becomes a way of life. And so learning to live with my own body and denying all of the sexual abuse became mm-hmm. very difficult. It seeped out in other directions, as everybody will know when they read the book. You know, and the book is about how it seeped out. It's not about how much of a victim I am or anyone else is. It's how that abuse played out in my whole life and came full circle.
Well, you know, it's an amazing book to read, and I highly recommend it. But we will talk about later in the show one of the wonderful things that came from this book, that came from your existence, and that was a nonprofit organization that you founded, and it's called Ricky's Revolution. Briefly, just share a little bit about who Ricky is.
Ricky is a stuffed monkey. I had a little stuffed monkey when I ran away from home. You'll read through the book, I was on the streets quite a bit, mostly. And Ricky was a stuffed animal that I stole from a Five and Dime. But he was my, you know, he was my Barbie doll. Like, I didn't have those dolls, but I had he was my toy, my stuffed mm-hmm. monkey. And you know how it is with kids. I developed a relationship with my stuffed animal. I really did. And kept me warm and sometimes sane, and was with me when I was sleeping alone and, gas stations or, you know, in back of grocery stores or on the streets and the alleys. I mean, he was my constant companion as a child mm-hmm. on the streets. And we recreated him. And we yeah. recreated him with life-saving numbers on him. Used to be on his arms. Now they're on his belly and his back because we have to have sex trafficking numbers on there. Mm-hmm. And runaway hotline and rape, abuse, incest hotline are on his body for others. And we distribute him out to the streets for free. 23 states now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Could you share the website for Ricky's Revolution with our listeners?
Yes, please. Thanks for reminding me of that. Ricky's Revolution is rickysrevolution.org. You can learn about Ricky there. I have a video on there. Everything that we've been doing, our GoFundMe campaign, we're gearing up for the Super Bowl, which is coming to San Francisco. And we just have so many things that are going on with Ricky. We could use the support. If you can't donate, share. Also, you can find out more about the book, Layla, because it helps as well, and it helps so many, so many people at JeannieKerrigan.com.
Fantastic. And it's a book that I highly recommend. Now, Jeannie, when we left off on your last visit to the show, we got to the chapter called Freeze. And Freeze is when there was no more funding for you at Winnebago. Bring our audience up to speed on what was Winnebago and how long were you there?
Yeah, are we going to get through this whole book? It's going to take us for a year. Okay.
Well, I'm enjoying it.
I know. So Winnebago Mental Health Center, we can read about that, the Reflections of a Dream. It was, I had finally gotten picked up and was in a detention center, and it was at a period in my life where there, you know, I didn't have a whole lot of places to turn. The streets were getting really ugly. My home was not a safe place for me. I was on the run. I was starting to shoot up drugs. I had gotten horribly raped on the streets. And so by the time I landed in the detention center, I got picked up, I was kind of happy to be there. And the social worker that got involved in my case decided that I needed to go to a drug treatment program because, of course, I told everybody that I was a drug addict. And that was kind of like a little pact that my father and an unspoken pact that my father and I had that I would take the rap for any abuse. He really stood by my side and befriended me when I went into that place. And I remember the walk. He took me out for a walk and kind of made this deal with me that I would go into this treatment program. It was going to be really good for me. He was going to be close to me. He was going to be my friend. And the unspoken word was that I would never speak about what he did to me.
Oh.
So I went into Winnebago Mental Health Institute, which is a program that they found in the state of Wisconsin. It was a polydrug unit or a drug treatment program designed after Synanon way back in the early 70s, late 60s, which is a boot camp type treatment. Mm-hmm. This one was for adolescents. It was a long-term treatment care. But it was housed at Winnebago Mental Health Center, which was one of the insane asylums in Wisconsin.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
So, yeah, but as we talked about in the book and in our previous radio shows, it was very scary. It was horrible. I love the way I describe it in the book. I read that over and over and over, and it's perfect. It's a perfect description of driving into an insane asylum of the old days. You know, pretty awful. But it turned out that the drug treatment program and the people there. I mean, it was a long term, and it was very abusive treatment, and it was horrific treatment. I got hives. I was scared. But it, as it turned out, it sort of saved me in a way. I became physical. I stayed clean and sober, and I was able to tear apart. It's the first time I learned about tearing apart, kind of what's going on in your world and my field and what was wrong with me and what was good about me. And it was the first time that I felt like somebody cared about me because the counselors there did. And the people that I was in treatment with did. We really loved each other. It was my first real family. And
share what happened, though, when they sent you back to your real family. What happened you had to go back and face everyone?
It was a test run. So again, really smart therapist, good counselors, Dan Milesevich, the director. I don't know if I should say his name. Can I say his name? Okay. He was Dan the director. Dan the director.
I like that.
He knew that my home was not a safe place. He knew there was something going on with my father. Nobody would speak about it. Nobody could pinpoint it. So as an experiment, they sent me home for a weekend pass, which was a disaster.
Yeah.
It was simply a disaster, and that's what Dan was hoping for. However, when I got to be discharged, and this is where we're going to go into freeze, finally they did find me a home, a beautiful home, which we'll get to. Oh, Mrs. Chase's group home, which was she was a grandmother and she loved me. She loved us all. But before that, I had to go home to my parents' house for a week. The funding had run out for me to be in Winnebago, and they hadn't quite set it up. The red tape hadn't been completed for me to go to Mrs. Chase's. So I had to be housed at my father's house, my father and mother's house, for what I thought was a week. It turned out to be less, thank goodness, but it was the last time that my father tried to sexually abuse me. And I did not bury that. I knew it. I knew exactly what he was doing.
Mm.
Yeah.
And he confronted you. He cried. He wanted your sympathy.
He actually went to my bedroom. I was sobbing. I was crying. I did not want to leave Winnebago. I was leaving David, the first love of my life. I was so upset at leaving Winnebago. I didn't know how to function outside of that treatment center. Part of the problem with that treatment center was aftercare was not the best.
But
I was sobbing in the front room of the house because I didn't even have a bedroom in that house anymore. And I was laying on the couch in the front room. He came in, he shut the door behind him, and he sat down. And he said, "You know, Jeannie, I'm hurting too." And he said, "I need to tell you that your mother's no longer having sex with me. I've been having affairs with other women." And that's when I blacked out.
Mm-hmm, sure. Yeah. As you should. And your mother wasn't around when this happened, so this was something.
She was in the kitchen or in the basement doing laundry, or she was somewhere, but not paying attention. Yeah,
she was probably hiding. You know, we're going to take a break and hear from our sponsors, and when we come back, we're going to talk about what happened to Jeannie when she got to Mrs. Chase's girls' home and what a difference that made in her life. We'll be right back.
Layla, a book by Jeannie Kerrigan, will take you on a journey. A raw, heart-wrenching journey. The final resting place? Love. Jeannie is an author, healer, and executive director of Ricky's Revolution Nonprofit. You can get your copy of her book at JeannieKerrigan.com. Ricky's Revolution comes directly out of Layla, dedicated to helping homeless runaway youths and victims of sex trafficking reach a place of safety. We distribute Jeannie's monkey named Ricky with vital hotline numbers embroidered on him free to children on the streets through loving collaboration with thousands. Proceeds from the book and your donations have saved lives. Ricky'sRevolution.org. Joining January Jones as her co-host on the show is Miles Millard, the Great Success Creator. Miles is a two-time best-selling author with books entitled Against the Grain and Successonomics. He continues to transform 100,000 people all over the world through his speaking and training. His uplifting and essential messages like Bulletproof, Time Machine, and Strength in Numbers are impacting every audience he meets. Together with January Jones, they'll explore how to be successful and what steps you can take to achieve the success you want. Visit successhq.net, leadup.biz, and learningbreaks.com. Lately, there's a whining epidemic in our world. People are even whining about whining. Are you sick and tired of listening to everyone whining all the time? So was January Jones, the author of Thou Shall Not Whine, the 11th commandment that reached number one at Amazon.com. Ms. Jones based her book on a survey of the top 10 things that people whine about at all ages and all stages of life. January is a success coach that can tell you how to help others. When you buy Thou Shalt Not Whine, the 11th commandment, you'll find out what people whine about and how to stop them from whining. This is the perfect gift book to give or get for any occasion. Thou Shalt Not Whine was voted the best gift to be given anonymously for those special people in your life. Ms. Jones is an internationally known author in the style of Irma Bombeck, specializing in housewife humor with her book being published in Korea and China. You can find Thou Shalt Not Whine at Amazon.com.
Welcome back to the No Wine Zone. We're visiting with a wonderful guest who is not a whiner, and she's putting up with a host who is a whiner because I've just got a free pass from Jeannie to do a little whining until my hip replacement heals. Okay, now Jeannie, let's talk about Mrs. Chase. She just sounds like a dream come true for you.
What a sweet, sweet woman. Oh, my goodness. You know, all of us that were in Winnebago and all of us that were on the streets, I mean, it was difficult. Foster care is a difficult whole another issue. Oh, my God, it would be another 20 shows to talk about foster care.
Sure.
And how I lucked out the first time. Wow, I was lucky. Wow, maybe blessed. And it was a mixed bag in a sense that they were driving me into, thank goodness, at my dad's house, the social worker called and said, okay, your bed is ready, and I didn't have to stay there longer than 4 days. And my mother drove me to, it was a social worker, drove me to Mrs. Chase's. And she was a grandmother. She was, at that time, a grandmother to me was in their 60s, and she was. And her husband had died, and she had been taking care of girls, foster care girls, her whole life. That's what she did. She had a beautiful, beautiful little home.
How many girls were there when you got there?
There were six girls. She only had room for, I think she had room for eight, but there were six of us. And in fact, I'm still friends. My roommate at Mrs. Chase's, we're still friends. Her name is Margie. She's still alive.
Okay, now share with us a little bit about your love, the love of your first love, David. Yes, what happened there?
Bring him up. Well, it's kind of it's a sweet, sad story. David stayed at Winnebago. He came later, and so he was also extended. He had to stay, and I had to leave, so there was a separation of us. And in fact, I remember having a conversation with the therapist when I was at Mrs. Chase's. They said, Jeannie, you guys can't talk every day, because it was kind of taking David out of his treatment, and you know what I mean? So, and we continued to have a relationship, but it got difficult. Life changed very quickly when I left Winnebago. It wasn't like it was in Winnebago on the outside. First of all, you know, I went to my father's, and he sexually abused me for the last time, and and I drove into Mrs. Chase's just frozen, hence the title of that chapter. And she was loving and beautiful and kind, and they put me into high school, and I had to go to high school with normal individuals, and I was red marked. I thought that I was nothing. I couldn't fit in. It wasn't anyone else's fault. I just didn't know how. I didn't know how to do this high school thing, or you know, go to the rec club after school and play foosball. And it was a mess. And I ran away from there. I ran away. I remember a man reading my book, the very first man, no, second man to read my book. And he said, why did you run away from why did you leave? He was so upset because the book is so emotional. He's like, this was your chance to succeed. And I remember looking at him, and I said, Darren, there wasn't a cell in my body that said I could succeed the way that other people saw as normal. I was not normal. I was not happy. I did not know how to fit into a high school, a little town. It was a little resort town. Everybody knew everybody. I didn't know how to do this normal graduate, get your diploma, go to college thing. I felt horrible and frozen and ugly, and so I couldn't succeed. I sabotaged it.
So you ran away with Margie, and then you hooked up with a new friend, Monica, and you were on the road. What a disaster, huh?
What a disaster. I actually ran away twice. I ran away with Margie. Margie saved me. She got me back. Lovely woman that she. And then I ran again soon thereafter, just a couple of days after. And I want to say that, you know, I mean, for those people who are looking at children of abuse, when they say, well, why didn't you, why didn't you, why didn't you? The other thing that I think is incredibly important when you look at children who are victims of sexual abuse is that their behavior looks like they're sabotaging what's going on and that they're juvenile delinquents or they're bad. Let me tell you all the labels that I had. But when I ran away from Mrs. Chase's, it broke my freeze.
Oh, okay.
I don't know how to explain that, but it broke my numbness. It broke my freeze. So I had to grab onto some kind of an adventure to kind of wake up the deadness inside that my father had penetrated into me with his penis. So there's a whole dynamic that's going on with that you don't see that's behind the skin of children. So I think that's important to remember. And I ran away and I got abducted and raped again.
Wow. Yeah. And this is the abduction. You were with Tammy and Monica at this time.
Yeah.
And the three of you were abducted and you got separated. And that's when you lost Ricky, isn't it?
Yeah, I lost Tammy, I lost Monica, and I lost Ricky. Yeah, to this day, I don't know what happened to the two of them. I have never
really?
Seen him. I don't know. He was pretty smart in separating us. They were younger and they were tinier than me. I was the older one, and he, yeah, as soon as he had me alone, I was tied up, beaten, and thrown into the back of the truck. Yeah. Yeah, and you know, this is the one piece that you can listen to me talk about on Ricky's Revolution site. I'm looking at my business partner going, is it on Ricky's site? Where I do the interview, about Ricky and losing mm-hmm. him, the story of how he came about. The truck that I was in, the muffler blew on the highway, which was incredibly terrifying to me because I was in the, I mean, you can read the chapter, but it saved my life.
Yeah.
Because I was in such a shape, and whatever he was planning to do with me at the time, he was going to get busted like within minutes, because when the muffler blows on a highway like that, who knew it was so loud, right?
Yeah.
And the whole thing had fallen apart, so it was this automotive issue that saved me, or a spirit, you know, jumping in the way saved me. And he had me out of that truck, into another truck, and on the streets, and abandoned within 20 minutes, not even.
Wow, and that was probably the luckiest thing that ever happened to you, but also it was the saddest thing you lost Ricky. And when we come back after our break, I want you to share how that losing Ricky really broke you, and then how you found some wonderful woman, a big black beautiful woman, at the Salvation Army, and thank God for the Salvation Army. We'll be right back with Jeannie Kerrigan.
January is thrilled to be welcoming Dr. Nancy Irwin. We'll be co-hosting on iHeartRadio with January Jones. As a doctor of psychology, clinical hypnotist, and author of U-Turn, Changing Direction in Midlife, Dr. Nancy is an agent for change. Many people believe that change can be scary, but she believes it can actually be creative and fun. She does know a thing or two about change, because at age 44, she transitioned from a stand-up comedian to shrink. Oh, believe her, the road from comedy to mental health is very short indeed. Most fears are learned, and the good news is whatever we learned, we can unlearn. Smoking, overeating, fear of public speaking, test anxiety, what have you. On our show, we'll be discussing how you can dissolve that negative programming and free your inner winner. Change is inevitable. You can either affect it or accept it. Visit her site, drnancyirwin.com. With over 30 years as a registered nurse with empathic ability, Carolyn Green, a.k.a. The Energy Nurse, is bridging the gap between traditional and alternative medicine. Certified in the areas of energy medicine, life coaching, and as a medical intuitive, she brings to each client an integrative approach to body, mind, and spirit. Her book, found on Balboa Press and Amazon, Getting to Know You, Guided Pearls of Wisdom for a More Soulful Existence, is a channel journey for clearing the mind clutter to bring about healthier thought patterns. As a motivational speaker, Carolyn brings new light to old issues and is engaging, interactive, and enlightening. with her newly launched The Energy Nurse Jewelry Line. She brings to you stones and crystals that are not only beautiful to wear, but balancing and healing as well. To contact or learn more about Carolyn, go to www.theenergynurse.com.
Have you ever met someone who was unforgettable? Someone who has touched your heart and soul? People who have faced difficult problems? People who have fearlessly shared their stories, their struggles, and their successes? People who have priceless personalities? In my new book, Priceless Personalities, Success Stories Shared by January Jones, I am honored to be able to share with you people dealing with problems such as incest, molestation, child abuse, drug abuse, polygamy, unemployment, scandal, starting over, self-esteem, and workplace issues. My guests have all been exciting, eclectic, and energizing. They will amaze, amuse, and even astonish you. You will adore getting to meet them at Amazon.com. My book is now available, 2-for-1, paperback and Kindle editions.
Welcome back with a priceless personality visiting with us today, my co-host Jeannie Kerrigan. She's the author of Layla and the co-founder of Ricky's Revolution, and that is a nonprofit organization that you can visit. Jeannie, we're talking about after you went to Peachtree, you got away from the guy who you lost Ricky with, you went to a shelter, and you kind of were living on the streets, weren't you? And you called your dad to ask if you could come home, and what did he say?
I think his words were something like, I don't know, he was all proud of himself. He said, I don't know what you're running away from. I think that you're not running away. I think you're searching for something. What are you searching for, Jeannie? Those were his words. But, he sent me the money. I was picked up by the dispatcher of the police station because the police wouldn't come and get me. So the dispatcher took a lunch break, took me to the Salvation Army, and I proceeded to hang out on Peachtree Avenue for a while until I got on the Greyhound bus to go back to Wisconsin. Yeah.
And you got home and you walked in the door. You told your mother you'd been raped.
Yeah.
and then she just is like, she didn't hear what you said or
no.
she didn't process it. And then you returned to Mrs. Chase and she took you back and made you chicken soup, didn't she?
She did. She took me back. It was questionable. She could have said no. It was the second time I ran away. And of course I was a ward of the state. So she had the right to refuse me and she did not. She took me back in and she was amazing. She was a mother. She wrapped her arms around me. She put me to bed. She made me chicken soup. She drew me a bath. She cut my toast up and put cinnamon and sugar on it. She never ever said what's wrong with you or confronted me. She just nursed me back to health and I went back to school and I graduated.
Okay. So now how old were you when you graduated?
I was 17 when I graduated from high school. One of the things that they did was the social workers and the state put together a whole packet of the whole time that I was in Winnebago. And, like I was doing gym class, they made it all count at a high school, at the Wolpaca High School. So they made this whole deal. Well, and I think the high school kind of made a deal. I was surprised that my diploma was signed. They did say, when I went back to school, they said, you have to do A, B, C, D. One of them was called back scheduling, where every open moment I had, and I had to do detention, I had to go sit in a room, and I had to make up all this stuff. Margie did my homework for me, and we really pushed it, and I got out of there at 17. Yeah.
Wow. So then your mom decided you should go to college, but you're going to college and you really didn't have much of an education.
I couldn't read.
Emotionally, socially, educationally, you were lacking. So when you got to college, you had that I'm really dumb feeling, didn't you?
I had more than I'm dumb feeling. I sat in the back of a class and didn't say a word. It was horrible. Mm-hmm. It was excruciatingly painful to be live in, have humiliation just kind of dripping from your cells. I can't even speak. I couldn't even speak, much less spell or write a paper or anything. You know, it was really difficult. There was a program, a social work program at the time that said you could go into college on probation. Mm-hmm. And I had to keep a GPA to stay in the college and had this little apartment for $95 a month and was trying to get myself to college and, you know, and no, I couldn't do it, but you know what? I loved it.
Well, tell us a little bit about Mythology 101. This is where you really connected, didn't you?
It was one of those classes where I had to write, finally, here comes the, was it a midterm exam? It was the first, mm-hmm. my first essay exam ever, which was, you know, the blue book.
yes, I remember that.
So here's, it's an essay. I was hoping, they don't tell you ahead of time, I was hoping it was multiple choice. It turned out to be essay. Mm-hmm. And you could choose from five different questions, and I chose my question and I started writing. But what happened was, and at first I was almost in tears because I thought, I'm going to flunk. This is it. Here's my first F. I'm out of college. They're never going to keep me here. I'll never keep the GPA. But I loved Mythology. And even though I couldn't read like other, I mean, I had to read books five times, you know, I had to go back over, I had to look up words, and they didn't have spell check and stuff like, they didn't have computers. I had to look it in a dictionary. It was difficult for me to read. But Mythology, I loved it.
Uh-huh.
And the question that he asked, I thought was incredible. He gave me free rein to be creative, and so I lost myself. You know, it was the first time in my life where I started writing, and I got lost in my mind, in my field, and in my spirit. And I wrote the answer to this question, and finished it and handed it to him thinking, oh, he's going to think I'm insane, but I just really had a good time writing that. And yeah, came back a week later and it was time to pass out the exams. And, uh-huh. you know, sure enough, you know, he held on to mine. It was the last one. I'm thinking, oh boy, he's not even going to give this to me in front of the class. He's going to wait till after, tell me I was horrible.
Yeah.
And he didn't. He held the paper up and he said, the booklet, and he said, now I want to show you what an A-plus paper looks like.
Wow.
And I about died. I mean, the spelling was horrible. There was punctuation. I didn't know about those things. There was probably 2,000 exclamation points in there because I wanted to get my point across. It was horrible. But
oh,
the writing
wow.
was good. And he called me out in front of everybody. And it took everything I had to get through. It was the end of the class, thank God. And when he came to me afterwards to hand me my paper personally, by that time I was shaking and crying. And he said, uh-huh. he just said to me, I think he knew. He said, if you do nothing else on this planet, go to college and finish college.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And this was, I love in your book, the way you write that you first, but this was the first time you realized you were smart. And you
yep.
called up your mom and you said, yeah. I am smart, I am smart, I am smart. And, of course, your mom
yep,
said,
yep.
well, we knew that all along. Well, thank you.
A matter of factly, she said, well, we put you in kindergarten early because you were so smart.
Yeah.
And I'm like, are you kidding me? Why didn't you tell me?
Yeah, that would have been something. That would have
yeah.
been a good thing to share when we look back. Another good thing to share is our wonderful sponsors, and we're going to hear from them. And when we come back, Jeannie's going to also share again her book and her website where you can find them. We'll be right back.
One expert, one solution. The book, The 411 on Step-Parenting, teaches you how to create a well-blended step-family. The 411 on Surviving Teenhood helps parents and teens cope with teenage temptations, teachable moments, and teenage social dilemmas. The books, The 411 on Life Skills and Ace Your Life, helps those living on their own with home and money management, personal care and safety, and much more. An award-winning, best-selling author, registered nurse, and personal growth mentor, Michelle Sfakianos will help you. Get the 411, my411books.com. Have you ever met someone who was shot in the chest in cold blood and lived to tell it? Now you have. Meet Hannah Lugeri Murray, author, advocate, and survivor of domestic violence, and now the founder and president of Angel of Mercy Shelter of Hope. Her dreamlike life turned to horror as her raging husband stood across her and fired his gun. She was left for dead. By a miracle, she survived to tell her story. Her book is available on Amazon and her website. If you'd like to have a personally signed copy, please visit her website at livetotellit.com. Hannah is now in the process of raising money to build her own shelter in Chandler, Arizona. Her shelter will house abused women, their children, and unique to Arizona, their pets. For more information, please visit her website at angelofmercyshelter.org. What is AATH? The Association for Applied and Therapeutic Humor is a nonprofit, member-driven, international community of humor and laughter professionals and enthusiasts. AATH provides its members the education, cutting-edge resources, and supportive community they need to excel in the practice and promotion of healthy humor. AATH welcomes anyone who is interested in learning more about the application and benefits of therapeutic humor. Members include scholars, psychologists, counselors, nurses, social workers, physicians, educators, clergy, hospital clowns, and many others who incorporate humor in their life and work. AATH was created to disseminate information about humor and laughter, laughter play and well-being, provide a caring, supportive community of humor professionals and enthusiasts. Check out our AATH at www.aath.org today.
Welcome back with our guest, Jeannie Kerrigan. And as I read her book and look at her writing, I can see how she got an A+, a perfect mark on her grade. It was wonderful. Very quickly, Jeannie, we have 5 minutes. Could you share your website information again?
Yes, JeannieKerrigan.com. You can find out about the book. You can see more about the book there. And Ricky'sRevolution.org, that's the nonprofit that we have across the nation right now that's doing incredible work. Please go if you're interested. The book will help so many people who read it. Everybody who has picked up this book has gotten something good from it. All the proceeds from the book go to Ricky's Revolution, and we're saving lives.
Oh, you are. You're doing a wonderful job. We're going to just end this chapter, and you didn't graduate from college, but you were in college, you were getting yourself together, and then you made a trip back to connect with your boyfriend, David, who seemed to be doing well. His mom was very happy to see you, and you were anticipating a lovely reunion, but that didn't happen, and this really turned your world upside down, didn't it?
Yeah, that didn't happen. That weekend, his parents were going to go see him. They asked if I wanted to go. It would be a great reunion. We were kind of all excited. I was in college. I was doing business things, or so I thought. And that weekend, all three of them were killed.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And this is the first time someone you loved had died, isn't it?
Like that, yeah.
Yeah. Very violent. What kind of a depression did you go into after that?
It was more than a depression. I think I was sane for about 2 years. It was very difficult for me to walk in reality. It was very, very difficult for me to be even... I was not well. Mm-hmm. Depression is one thing, but on the edge of, I think I'm crazy, is another, you know? I mean, I was dreaming about him. I couldn't believe he was dead.
Well, it's such a shock. I know my first husband, his name also was David, and I shared with you earlier that he had he died in a tragic airplane crash. And so sometimes when something like that happens, such a violent car crash or airplane, it's very hard to process. And I think it takes years to actually accept it, and then you never get over it, do you?
Really does. Yeah, it does. No. Isn't that crazy? Here we are, 50?
Yeah. Oh,
40 years later.
Yeah. 48 years later, and we're talking about it, and it's like it happened yesterday. It's one of those things that, and you know, you always expect people are going to get old, die in their bed, and fall asleep, and it'll be very, you know, soothing and, comforting. But sometimes it just doesn't happen that way. And it's a traumatic thing to go through when you have the support of a family. And I can't imagine what it'd be like to go through when you're alone and you're just a teenager. Very tough to write about, but I'm so glad you wrote about it, and I'm so glad that you are sharing your story. It is truly a success story, and Jeannie will be back with us August 3rd, and we'll continue more of her success story, And it has a wonderful, wonderful ending, doesn't it, Jeannie?
It does. It's a great ending. Yeah.
I just don't want people to get depressed. Thank you, Jeannie. And to my wonderful listeners, we hope you've enjoyed our show with Jeannie. She is exciting, eclectic, and energizing, and she's doing really great, important, wonderful work with her life right now. I'd love to welcome you to our wonderful No Whining World. When you can, sign on to my website, January Jones. We love sharing our stories, our struggles, and our secrets for success. Remember my mantra, if you think it, then you can do it. So for now, dear friends, stop with the whining and then start smiling and then start sharing our show with everyone you know. And if that doesn't work, then start eating chocolate, lots and lots of chocolate. Again, thank you to my wonderful guest, Jeannie Carrigan, the author of Layla and founder of Ricky'sRevolution.org. This is January Jones thanking you for joining me today on my journey and reminding you to take care and stay safe as we close with music by Sorantos.
This is Sorantos. Bye. And you're listening to January Jones.
We accept the love we think we deserve. In my life I've made so many mistakes. It's a song where in love's away. I lost my faith after all.
Sorantos. I hope you enjoyed January Jones' latest episode.
We want to thank you for listening to January Jones Sharing Success Story. Always remember Ms. Jones' personal mantra, if you can think it, you can do it. That's what all of our guests have done with their lives, and so can you. You are the ultimate success coach in your own life. All you need to do will be to start sharing your own story with your family and friends. We hope that our guest stories will encourage you to explore an equation in your future that will combine your creativity plus connecting with others will enable you to be successful too. Always remember, your passion plus your purpose will equal prosperity as you explore the wonderful world of January Jones.
All right.